From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Andrea Lorien, filling in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Thursday, April 25th, and here are today's headlines. A long-running campaign to add an equal protection clause to Vermont's constitution hit a key milestone this week. That's after the Senate advanced a proposal that would require equal protection under the law based on protected classes, like gender identity. Windham County Senator Nader Hashim says recent and historical decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court have, in some cases, demonstrated blatant disregard for the well-being of marginalized populations. And while the current political climate in Vermont may not be overly hostile to people based on their race, sexual orientation, or other identities, he says a constitutional safeguard against discriminatory treatment is warranted.
I don't want to witness a future in my lifetime or future generations' lifetimes in which government can pass or enforce laws that discriminate and cause division among Vermonters. And so that is the problem that this amendment proposes to address.
The proposed amendment, known as Proposal 4, now goes to the House. If it gets approved by both chambers again in the next legislative biennium, Vermont voters will decide whether to add the language to the Vermont Constitution in the 2026 general election. A 35-year-old man pleaded not guilty Tuesday to setting fire to the Burlington office door of Senator Bernie Sanders. Shant Michael Sagamonian is accused of using fire to damage a building used in interstate commerce. The federal charge carries a 5 to 20-year prison sentence. Federal prosecutors say Sagamonian allegedly sprayed a liquid on the door of Sanders' office in downtown Burlington and then lit the door on fire. There were multiple people in Sanders' office when the fire started, though no one was injured and Sanders was not in the office. Law enforcement officials have not indicated any potential motive for the alleged arson. A judge last week ordered Sagamonian to be held in prison while the case is pending. The Vermont House yesterday gave its final approval to legislation that further regulates so-called ghost guns. Those are firearms that are assembled by their owners from individual parts. The bill requires individuals to take their weapons to a federally licensed gun dealer so they can conduct a background check and emboss a serial number on the gun. Rutland City Representative William Knott told his colleagues that it's currently difficult for law enforcement officials to trace ghost guns when they're used in a crime.
Allows people a very large loophole to step through in possessing a firearm, and many people who would do this would do it for bad reasons.
Opponents say the bill would be problematic to enforce, is not needed in Vermont, and would likely face a court challenge if signed into law. Norwich University's Board of Trustees has appointed the school's 25th president. Retired Lieutenant General John Broadmeadow will become the first alumni to hold the top position at the military school in more than three decades. He also becomes the highest-ranking officer and the first Marine to take over as president, according to a press release from the university. Broadmeadow is currently on the college's Board of Trustees and will transition to his new role May 1st. Norwich University's last permanent president, Mark Anarumo, resigned in early January. That was after the board put him on paid leave, and an investigation determined he violated the school's core values and policies. The university has not provided further details on Anarumo's conduct. Coming up, how recent storms have led some coastal Maine residents to reconsider their lack of flood insurance. That's after this. Few homeowners in New England have flood insurance, but that may soon change. Recent storms and severe flooding have them reconsidering that need. And so do updated floodplain maps from the Federal Management Agency. As part of this year's Earth Day series from the New England News Collaborative, Maine Public's Nicole Ogrisco reports on how some coastal homeowners are adjusting to the risks they face.
When Bob Foley built his home in a marshy area of Wells, Maine 40 years ago, he was thinking about future flood risks. He built it higher than he needed to and installed vents in the crawl space so that in the event of a flood, water could easily flow out. But 2 years ago, the family decided it wanted to renovate, and Foley, a retired insurance broker, knew that changes to FEMA's floodplain maps were coming.
In looking at, you know, the flooding and the potential flood maps and the elevations, we decided that it was better just to rebuild the house.
So when Foley rebuilt the home, he elevated it again, The new foundation sits about 2.5 feet higher than the original. And after the two severe storms that hit Maine this January, Foley says the decision to build higher paid off. No water made it inside his home.
Had we had the old foundation with the flood we had this winter, we would have had a foot of water in our crawl space.
And though Foley's not required to have flood insurance because his mortgage is paid off, he's keeping it, just in case. His home falls within a zone that FEMA says faces a small but significant risk of a 100-year flood. And soon, other properties in two counties near the Maine coast will be part of that zone, too, according to regional floodplain maps that FEMA has spent the last 7 years updating. Homeowners in the floodplain who have a federally backed mortgage will be required by their banks to purchase flood insurance. And many are not thrilled with the prospect.
Is it truly a concern?
Lisa Westberg and her husband moved to Scarborough from New Jersey nearly 25 years ago after a bad storm flooded their basement. Westberg asked Scarborough town officials about the area's flood history. She eventually found out part of her property had a flood risk, but the rest was safe. So she got an exception from FEMA and wasn't required to pay for flood insurance. She says the woods act as a buffer between her yard and a nearby marsh.
And I was like, okay. We're safe. But that's not necessarily how people will view it in 2024.
Now Westberg doesn't believe she can get an exception. She and her husband are semi-retired and uncomfortable with the flood insurance costs. The average policy in Maine runs about $2,700 a year, the second highest in New England, after Connecticut. Westberg also worries the value of her home will dip once the new maps go into effect. That's a common concern among property owners throughout New England, says Charles Colgan, an economist and researcher with the University of Southern Maine. He says the floodplain maps themselves are imperfect because they're based on historical observations.
They do not account for sea level rise, nor do they account for the increase in precipitation probability that are both known to be consequences of climate change.
Municipal officials in Maine agree. They say FEMA's maps overrepresent the risk in some places and underrepresent it in others. Westberg says she knows storms are getting more intense, but she thinks she's safe from rising water for a while.
I'm not worried about it. Maybe I'm naive, but I'm not worried about it.
After all, Westberg says she's never had water inside her home. John Houlihan has never had water inside his home in Wells either. But he says it came close enough during the recent storms.
If that's the level of water that we've never seen before, and climate change is real, then what are the chances that it could be higher next year, 5 years, 10 years? And in our assessment, the risk is pretty high.
Most homeowners' insurance policies do not cover flood damage, and many homeowners can't afford to rebuild. That's why Houlihan says he'll purchase a basic flood insurance policy. His home is one of the new additions to the FEMA floodplain maps. But Houlihan says he doesn't need a map to tell him what he's seen from his window this year. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Nicole LaGrisco.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Pete Hirschfeld, Liam Elder Connors, and Bob Kinzel. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevlin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Andrea Lorien. Talk to you later.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.